What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on our show, we have Mr. Darren Vargas. Hi, Darren.
Woo! Hey everyone, how you guys doing?
Good. I'm excited to chat with you. I love your work. I will say that right now. Big fan. But before we get into all that stuff, do you mind giving our listeners an introduction on who you are and how you got into photography?
Yeah, not at all. So my name's Darren. I'm a freelance photographer here in Los Angeles. I got into photography through my mother, actually. She came over from Mexico, from Nayarit specifically, when she was 14 to the States.
Wow.
And she was in poverty. She's very poor. So she had cameras and stuff always around her documenting her experience. And that was just the only source of creativity that she could really afford. And so, just growing up and being in the house, there was always some sort of camera near me or something I could record it with. That's kind of how I stumbled upon it. And I think in high school, I had my first real camera, which was, like a Canon 35 millimeter something or other. I can't remember what the body was, but it was a film camera. And so I was just kind of taking the time to record my experience as well and kind of taking after her in that respect. And, yeah, that's how I got into it, I guess. Yeah.
So did you go to school for photography at all, or are you all just kind of like self-taught?
Yeah, so I actually went to school for graphic design. I graduated with a BFA in print design from Fresno State, and photography was just always one of those secondary things that I was interested in. And I realized that I really didn't like the dynamics of being a graphic designer in a commercial mm-hmm. space or in a private studio space. It wasn't what I was really interested in after I got my degree in it.
Sure. But, don't you hate when that happens?
yeah. And I started going more towards photography. I worked at an agency here in LA for almost 5 years as an in-house photographer for lifestyle and product photography. And then in June, I wasn't there anymore. And last year in June, I decided that I kind of wanted to stick to it and try to do freelance. I kind of saw a gap in. And I think a lot of people see the gap, but photography, commercial photography, and the creative industry as a whole is pretty like white male dominated. Sure. So for me, it was a good opportunity to see like if I could fill that gap and work with others on set that were not just white people or try to bring in some brown love into that atmosphere. And I have a 2-year-old daughter as well, and her mom is also is also Mexican. So for me, it was like, if I can at least show her that being brown is not a weakness in becoming, you know, somebody in the industry or work or whatever your definition of success is, finding that, you know, being anything other than white is not a weakness. So at least I have that part. I mean, her being a woman as well. And I mean, yeah, Chris, you know this as well. You know, being a woman, it's very hard to get into the industry. Yeah. And so at least, you know, for who she is, the color of her skin, you know, I can set an example in that way. And so
that's so wonderful. And honestly, like, it's inspiring just, I mean, not only to your daughter, to people, your coworkers, anybody, to, you know, realize that there's space for everybody and there should be space for everybody.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, so I don't want to like break the fourth wall or anything, but we chatted before already. We had some technical difficulty last week, guys. Yeah, we tried to record this. And I wanted to just touch on something that resonated with me. We were talking about last time. This organically as we're going to get to this conversation, but we're talking about shooting film and like slowing down. Do you remember what shoot you had that you were being really intentional with?
Yeah. So I guess to preface that with, I try to do everything on film. I think the commercial stuff I do, it's obviously digital. Like it's usually what the client wants or how fast they need it. But for the most part, like any of my personal projects or anything that I get hired for that is like, if they reference something on my website or Instagram, then they're hiring me because I shoot film or because they like that look or whatever it is. And so, most of my shoots, I think early on, I had a shoot with the Palillo twins.
Yeah.
They're brothers here in LA. Incredible, incredible brothers. Super nice. The sweetest, sweetest boys. I got linked up with them through their manager, Ricky Directs, shout out. And we did like a Calvin Klein campaign that was put on their Instagram or whatever. And I think I enjoy film because it gives me that time in between each frame to really think about what I'm doing, but also to communicate with the subject. Mm. And I think that's far more important than just getting the shot. Yeah. I mean, like, granted, you're getting hired to get that shot, right? But it's just as important to connect with whoever you're photographing on a deeper level, or at least underneath the surface level, because that's the way only real work is made.
Yeah.
And so with film, as cliche as it sounds, and as like everybody says it, it's often said because it's very true. You get that space and you get the leeway to create conversation. And even if that conversation is struck by like the camera that you're using or like the people, the fact that people are like happy or excited that you're shooting film or whatever, you know, it's far more important to remember that the communication part, what you're trying to make with them it needs to be just as genuine.
Yeah. So we had Ryan Pfluger on too, and he doesn't even have an assistant. Like he will just change the film out of his camera like during a shoot and like talk. I was like, that blew my mind because I was like, what? Like, especially, you know, on like he shoots celebrities, and I've been on sets where it's like you only have this amount of time with celebrities. Like you don't get the time. So to be that intentional, like, okay, yeah, let's chat while I change my film. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But I had a shoot recently. It was even with a friend of mine. And I think the last time we talked, I hadn't got my scans back. But I picked up the digital because it was almost like a safety. Like I could show her like, look, we're getting it. See, we're getting it. And like I knew I was getting it. And then she knew. So it wasn't like when you shoot film, it's like, okay, we're shooting it. But they don't, you know, you don't really know like if it's coming out. Yeah. And I have since got my scans back, and I sent them to you, Timothy, and was like, why did I even shoot digital? Because I was literally editing the digital, and I was like, these aren't really doing it for me. I'm not really pumped on them. And then I got the scans back and was like blown away.
Yeah.
And I'm like mad at myself that, especially because we didn't have this conversation yet, but last week it resonated with me that like, you can't, especially as a friend who's like leaving the country. We should have just been connected. Yeah. But that like sparked me last week when we talked. And I just think it's like the more people say it, I think I just got to remember like, yeah, like it's, you're going to get the shot. Chill. You know?
Yeah. I think like the slowing down part's really important. And my buddy of mine, his name's Saul Barrera, and he's going to the Art Center right now. He's studying photography over there. But
wow,
he
cool.
shoots a lot of 4x5. And he had posted a photo at a barber shop, and he kind of told me the process behind that one photo and you know, he's just casually talking to this, to the owner of the barbershop, and, you know, casually pulling out the 4x5 and setting up and still like having a conversation and making it feel as organic and natural as possible. And, you know, he takes like 2 shots and then that's it. And then I'm also one of those photographers that I don't want to show the subject any of the photos. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah. I want to be there. Really. I want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not interested in sharing anything with them. And I think like, I also want to be like, you know, maybe one day I'll get to this point, but I want like when people bring me on for jobs or hire me or whatever, I want them to know like Darren's not going to show us anything. So don't ask for anything, but he's not showing us because he can't because it's fun, but B, we don't have to worry about him. He's going to get the shots. He knows what he's doing. And I think like when you get to that level too, it's like people will hire you and just be excited that like, okay, we have someone that knows what they're talking about and how they're doing it. But with that being said, having a team as well,
good,
somebody that knows how to do lighting correctly and someone that knows how to load film or whatever the assistance you have them do, that's just as important.
Totally.
And I've kind of figured that out in the last 6 months of doing this. It's like, you got to have the right people by your side. And
I'm sitting here and now I just keep thinking about, you know, the back of the camera or shooting tethered or just that whole, you know, bag that comes with shooting digitally and shooting like that. I mean, there's got to be so much something. I can't think of what the word is that I'm thinking of, but there's got to be some like baggage or something that comes along with shooting that way that takes you out of the moment, you know, like kind of how we're talking, you know, because one, especially like having to show somebody your raw, unedited photo and all that stuff. Is there any way that you can shoot with the back screen off or not tethered to a computer where things are popping up, where people are seeing it? I mean, can you make it more like film when you do these jobs, or are they just that way where you have to be showing people as they come out of the camera and stuff like that?
It depends on the job, probably, right?
Yeah, it depends. Like, I also have this studio called Poppy Studios, and that's where I do like my digitecking and retouching stuff. Like on a big commercial shoot, like a company will spend so much money on a single shoot, right? You know, you're talking about like talent, wardrobe, hair, makeup artist, set design, crafty, all these elements that go to it. So it's like, it's really important to have your camera tethered to a computer. So you have monitors or iPads or whatever. So you can get approvals. You can troubleshoot. Like, I don't like this here. I don't like that there. Let's move that, whatever. So there's definitely a time and a place for it. But usually like on smaller stuff, if I'm shooting, if the budget doesn't like allocate for Digitech or whatever, and like I have my camera, you know, I just tell client, like, just have to wait. I'll show you when they're done. But to go back to your question about like, you know, how do you keep from like showing a raw to a client? Usually when you have a Digitech, you can like edit your photo right then and there and then apply it to like all the incoming photos. Usually your Digitech will be able to like edit and then like add a curve or something, and then client can see that and prove it.
Okay. That makes way more sense. See, I've never been, the little bit of work that I've done like that was always, you know, for friends. I mean, I've done some paid for hire work and stuff like that. It's just it's not my cup of tea. I like to just kind of free range and do it.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah.
I don't know. Digital's whatever. It's cool. It gets the job done.
Just to kind of follow back, it just all comes back to, do you remember like they used to use Polaroids for these things?
Yeah.
Like that was your testing, and then you did the shots. I was watching a Annie Leibovitz video the other day and just being so pumped on her stuff, being like, damn, her team was just like a well-oiled machine. They went in, she boom, boom, boomed, and then got, you know.
Yep.
That stuff's so exciting. Like, yeah, I could totally be into something like that, but that takes years, decades of work and dedication and to get to a point like that to where you're, this is crazy.
It does. And I think like back to the team thing too, it's like when you keep working with the same people and you kind of build like camaraderie and trust, like that's where a lot of the magic happens. Like I definitely see photographers, you know, working on their own and stuff. You know, sometimes it can be really good, but I think like you're much stronger as a group of individuals, you know, trying to to get to this one goal. And I think like that's another reason why I stayed in or why I wanted to pursue photography, is because like I kind of said earlier, it's really like white male dominated. And so being on the commercial side of photography, it gives me the opportunity to bring in like people of color and make my team at least more diverse. And, you know, a couple weeks earlier in January, I had a job and I was the Digitech on it, but my good friend Carlos Jaramillo, he was the photographer on it. And he has an incredible book, by the way, called Tierra del Sol, Pomegranate Studios. You guys should check it out. But anyways.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll have to link that. We'll link it in the notes.
Yeah, but that was the first time I worked with a photo team that was just all people of color.
Wow. And
it was great. You know, it's like sad that I only experienced that once in like 7 months of doing this. But it was also like a beautiful like thing. It was like, cool, like this is happening, you know? And I think that's like one of my goals too, is I want to keep diversifying the field of photography and trying to mix it up a little bit more.
What was the energy like on the set? I bet everybody was just like stoked to be there, huh?
It was great. I mean, it was like the first assist, his name's Saul Barrera. I talked about him earlier. He was the lighting tech for the whole job. Carlos was a photographer. We had a good friend. Her name's Kayla, and she was a stylist. She now works at the LA Times. And then we had the second assist. Her name was Nori. And all of us, we just were having a good time. Like, that was the first time I met Saul and Nori. And on set, we just, like, clicked really well. We were just, like, insulting each other back and forth and just, like, having a good time and, like, talking trash. And then,
it was
a really good vibe. It was a really good experience, and hopefully more experiences like that. But yeah, it was cool.
So touching back on like your work, what goes into, say it's you, this is your shot, they're coming to you, they want the vision, they want all that stuff. Is it you that do that, or do you kind of allocate it out to people, or what, you know, what's like an average Darren, you know, shoot gonna be?
I think for the most part, I try to provide as much of the creative as possible. But I think for the last, since I started freelancing, since I started doing more photo stuff, probably the last 6 months, I was more focused on just trying to get my vision and what I wanted to do out there.
Yeah.
And what I'm learning now is it's always better to collaborate with other people.
Yeah.
And so I had recently this month, I had two other shoots that were just personal shoots, like test shoots. And I had again, Saul, my buddy, do all the lighting for it. And they just came out so much better than what I could have done on my own.
Wow.
Because of like my lack of knowledge, or because like I don't have time to do all of that on top of like doing the photography. And as well as like styling for both of those shoots, I had two stylists. And again, like their expertise and understanding of how clothing looks on a person and how, you know, what you should fit them in and what style and what like the goal is trying to be and what you're trying to get to, is it's always better to work with other people. So now, to kind of answer your question, like I trying to bring on more people for shoots, and people that have more experience than me, people that have been doing it for longer. And that's how I want to start working now, because again, like you work with people that are better than you or further ahead than you, you only learn more from there.
Experience. Very
true. To me, that's far more important than just like, this is my photo shoot. You know, this is a Darren photo shoot, you know?
This is like, you're making me all tingly again, Darren.
Here we
go. Because like, no, it's because like, I'm afraid sometimes to like put myself out there and be like, oh, I want to shoot this band or whatever, because I'm like, well, I'm like not the best at like lighting in the studio, or I haven't done it in forever. Like, okay, so like put a team together. Like, that is like, oh my God. It's just like, there's people who are lighting directors. There's people who are set designers. There's people who, like, you can collaborate and come up with something incredible, and you're still the photographer. It's still your shoot, but you have so much more creative insight that you're just going to get a better all around photograph
result.
It's such like a self-esteem thing too for me, that I've talked about this in the past. Like, I used to reach out to bands back before I moved to LA and like, go do a shoot. And like, for some reason, I've been like frozen because I haven't done it forever. And it's like, you know, I've been focusing on other aspects of my photography, so I haven't been doing that. That I'm like, like the thought of reaching out to a band scares the crap out of me now.
Yeah.
And I talked to a friend back home recently. I think I mentioned this too. And she was like, but you're so good at it. What do you mean? And it's just like, yeah, like I think I am. I think I can. And so I've reached out to people. I'm starting to like reach out to people, but like you just put more like confidence in me that like you can have a team effort to create something awesome.
Yeah. And I think like for a long time, I was very like reserved about like, well, I want people to know that I'm doing this. I want people to know that it's me doing it.
Right.
And that's like a very toxic, like not good trait. Right. Yeah. Like when you start working with other people and if they like sense that or feel that, they're like, I don't want to fucking work with this person. Like,
right. Yes.
Yeah. I think like people don't want to work with you if they feel that or sense that. And so one of my best friends, his name is Ramon Munoz, and he's a web developer at the Getty, but we worked together for a while. And he's like one of those friends that like, there's no like bullshit. He's just kind of like, he's very honest with me.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, people don't like you at work.
Oh,
I'm just like, I was like, why? And he's like, because you're like so like aggressive and territorial with like your projects and stuff.
Wow.
And then, but it took me years to get to this point where I'm like comfortable saying like, yeah, I was like that. I can't be like that because it's not healthy for me or like other people around me.
Wow.
You know, being a creator, maybe like if you're an accountant, you know, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
As a creative, it's not good. And so as soon as I started to learn, let that go. And then also with like the self-esteem stuff and like finding confidence and like that. And then working through those issues, or not issues, working through those obstacles. You like your work becomes way better and people can see it. People can feel it. And then you start making those gradual steps. And so I'm very like, also like there's enough work for everyone.
Yes.
So, you know, I also Digitech because I really enjoy it. I think it's great. I love buying stuff I don't really need. I like buying monitors. So like that's another toxic trick. Being able to do that and be a photographer. If I was only a photographer, I'm only competing against photographers. You know what I mean? So being a Digitech, it gives me the opportunity to work with photographers in a different capacity that I wouldn't have if I was only a photographer.
Man, and you can probably learn so much just from flipping through their work and stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. And like seeing how other people work and see how they move on set and how they converse with people and their communication, whatever. You know, like understanding that, okay, it's not just about you. And then being able to take on the role of like a team player and work with other people, you know, that's also like a huge benefit of like working through those things. And so, but the confidence thing, that's a good thing to bring up too. Like, it's always hard to reach out to people. You know, it's never like a good feeling to get a no or to like not even get a response.
Yeah.
Even to get a yes.
I know.
A yes is terrifying too, because that means, oh shit, I got to do this.
Now I have to do it. Yeah. So before we hopped on, I was telling Timothy a story. This goes back to like to the confidence thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm assisting this weekend for a photographer who turned out to be my neighbor, and our babies hang out. And when he first it's our music class we bring him to, but they hang out, you know, they're buds. But when we first met, like, oh, you're a photographer? Oh, I'm a photographer. Like, no way, what do you do? Blah, blah. And he was like, oh, do you ever assist? And I thought, like, I literally was like, no. Like did one of those. And I told my husband, he was like, why did you do that? And I was like, I shot myself. I ruined it. And I like was beating myself up because I was like, why did I do that? I could have, why say yes, right? You're always supposed to just make it till you make it, right? Just say yes. So we've been like, have become like more friends and stuff. And he's like seen my work because we follow each other. So I think he's been like, yes, you can. He's like, yes, you can. So I'm assisting him this weekend on a shoot.
Yeah, that's
and
so cool.
I'm excited and I'm going to make it till I make it. No, it'll be fine. It'll be good.
Yeah. And like, that's amazing that someone's giving you an opportunity to be a part of something or to like help them see their vision to try to get to its goal. And I think that's one thing I really enjoy about this community. And not just film photography, but the creative community in general is like everybody's willing to help each other as long as you're willing to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that took me forever to figure out too, because it feels like from the surface, it's like, well, no, I'm only doing this by myself. Like no one's going to help me. Nobody has time or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not good enough or whatever the your mental blocks are. And that was kind of the same way too. And then, you know, you start reaching out to people and then you start talking, having conversations, you make the effort to go and have coffee or something like that, or just hang out for an hour. And that makes a world of a difference. And that's like the foundation of a building relationship. So I think any opportunity that someone can give you to help out or learn something new is always, it's always a huge benefit to everybody.
Yeah, plus, like, you know, I'm sure like you feel this way too, Darren, obviously, like, I'll pay that forward someday. I'll bring somebody on who's like
100%.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. And I think you know, it's this, you know, you put in what you want to get, and you know, you give out what you want to get in return. And I'm definitely all for that. And you know, I've had people hit me up and DM me and ask, you know, hey, can I help you and stuff, or can I assist you? And half the time I'm like, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing. So,
right.
But, you know, it's, I always try to pay it forward. Don't ever be a dick, because then people don't want to work with you. And, I think that's why, like, the YouTube world for me is very, like, isolating and siphoned off. I feel like a lot of the times people kind of get together and it's just to get maybe shared audiences or something like that.
Mm. Right.
And so there's like no, like, at least on the surface level to me, I don't know that many people on the YouTube. It's just, maybe I'm talking out of my ass, but it feels like very surface level. There's like nothing like feels organic about it. It just feels like, we're just collaborating to get like likes or views or whatever. Mm-hmm. But so that's why I kind of like steer away from that. And that's why like being on set is a little bit more comfortable, like feels like we're more real. Yeah. So
no YouTube channel from you? Is that what you're telling us? Because,
you know,
it would be cool. I would subscribe. I'm just saying.
Same.
I think
that
there are so many incredible, talented individuals on YouTube right now. I would like to see more people of color making YouTube channels. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But I think that there are plenty of people doing an incredible job and that are far more knowledgeable and aspects of this than I am, but so no YouTube channel from me, but
all right
I appreciate the saying that you guys would subscribe, but I think the space is doing great in terms of being able to share and like spreading the knowledge of like photography in general, and I think that space doesn't need me.
I feel like that with my channel, that I'm like, I'm not that. Like, I'm not going to be an educator. I'm not going to review this camera.
Yeah.
But you can come along while I photograph this wedding this week. Yeah. You know, like, more like that kind of stuff. Anyway, I don't really know what's going with that, but that's just like.
No, but you want to share your experience. And I think that's one thing that I've been thinking about a lot too, is like my purpose in photography.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what am I trying to tell my. It's so cringe to talk like my audience or like my, you know, the people that care about my work. And I think like trying to find purpose in your work is really important to stand out amongst like a million fish in the sea.
Oh, it's insane. And,
and YouTube can be a great opportunity for you to find that. You know, maybe you just enjoy sharing your experience. And that's your purpose in photography, not in life, but photography. And so I think I'm in this position where I'm trying to figure out, what story am I trying to tell? What are my images? What do they mean to people? How am I expressing myself in a way that isn't exhausting for people or isn't a regurgitation of what somebody else has already done? And so I think like it's really hard to find that. It's really hard to assess that, because you know, sometimes you're just like, sometimes I look at my past work and I'm like, wow, like I wasn't doing anything here. I was just taking pictures of cars.
Mm-hmm.
What am I, you know, what like educational thing or what like what story am I trying to tell with that, when there's not really a story? And that's okay too.
Yeah.
But I think in my old age now, I'm like, I gotta mean something to someone.
Right.
And so I think I started realizing that when I read one of my buddy's books. His name's Emmanuel Hahn, and he has this book called Koreatown Dreaming.
Ooh.
And it is a book that he's a photographer.
Yeah.
And he started working on this book when he moved to LA in 2020 during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
And he's Korean, so he was going to Koreatown and he was interviewing and talking to the local businesses there and the people that own these businesses and the transitions and the obstacles that they were facing. And he has like write-ups and everything. You guys should definitely check it out.
Yeah, but that looks very interesting.
After meeting him and like going through his book and talking to him and hanging out, it's like, you know, like that his purpose is like telling these stories of like people that he relates to, people that he's talking to and connecting with on an emotional level.
Mm.
and it trying to experience what they've experienced and sharing their stories. And like, after seeing that, I'm kind of like, man, like, it's cool to take pictures. I love taking photos, but I think it's cooler to like have real emotion and real understanding of your own surroundings and taking those photos, right? And so, that's where I'm tapped into right now.
So is that going to like transpire into like a photo book or like a project or a show or something?
So I have a couple of ideas, and one of the photos I submitted of the,
the
twins hugging at the Huntington Beach Art Center thing. What was it? Emerge, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Right now, I think like on a personal level, I'm still trying to figure out who I am and where I come from and what my lineage means. Cause I have very, very like foggy understanding of, you know, everything before my mother and before my grandparents. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really like, I'm in this position where, sorry, can we get into, is it like, is this too much?
Yeah. No, oh, sorry. This is so good.
No, is this too much? Should I not get into this?
No, this is, we love this stuff. Yeah.
I was just going to ask, like, this is obviously, I don't know what you're going to go, but like, could you do something with your mom's negatives and like, do like side by side, you know, like, I'm just like,
whoop. Yeah, I was thinking about, I was going to come back around to visiting mom's work.
Yeah,
here.
Your mom was a photographer. Yeah. Where's her work?
Yeah. Okay. I'll get back into it. But okay. So, so I'm in this position in my life right now where, you know, I have my daughter and, you know, she's 2 years old, and, you know, I don't know what to tell her about her past because I don't know, I don't understand my past. So if I can't understand mine, I can't pass anything on to her other than my own experience. And, you know, when I was in middle school, my mom moved, me and her, we moved out to a place called Visalia. And it's Central California, kind of isolated from like big cities. Closest thing is Fresno. And so, you know, growing up, I wasn't raised with traditional Mexican experiences. You know, I didn't know what a quinceañera was. We didn't go watch the boxing fights at my uncle's house or anything like that. I didn't have that. And, you know, my mother being an immigrant, she was very attuned with like trying to assimilate with the people around her because she wanted to be accepted.
Right.
And so I grew up with more like, I guess, American experience, right? Like 4th of July, hot dogs, whatever.
Yeah.
But moving to Visalia, it was basically I was too white for the Mexican kids and I was too Mexican for the white kids. So I didn't have a place to fit in. Wow. And so now being older and like reassessing my past experiences of that, I'm like, okay, well, I don't want my daughter to grow up feeling like displaced in the world.
Yeah.
So how do I figure this out? And luckily, like my partner, Myra, she has really strong roots in Mexican traditions and things like that. So she has her experiences that I can ask about. But I think, so to kind of answer your question about like what I want to do with like these feelings and like these obstacles is, I think one project I had in mind was going to Indio, which is close to Coachella. And that's where my grandparents were born.
Oh, cool.
And my grandmother has a couple sisters that are still alive. And I think like probably before the summer, maybe a little bit towards the end of spring, I want to take a trip out there and kind of track my grandparents' experiences. My grandparents passed away in 2020 and 2021. So I can't really ask them, but, you know, documenting at least the places that are still there that they went to or had been to. And, you know, I guess when you kind of think of Indio or Coachella, you think of, you know, the festival, the music festival that they have there.
Yeah.
You don't think of like the people that have lived there and like the people that were raised there. And so I think that's like one project that I have in mind of like trying to reconnect with my roots, like figure out, I guess, who I am in that respect. And I guess another project I was thinking of was also going back to where my mom was from in Nayarit, Mexico, and connecting with her family. But to go back to what you guys kind of mentioned about like my mom's negatives and stuff, I unfortunately don't have any of those. We had moved so many times. We just like, you know, she was a single mom. So trying to manage like all these things happening and, you know, moving so much, they just kind of got lost or dumped or thrown out. So
My mom didn't save any of our negatives. She would like
put
the photos in a photo book and then toss the negatives.
And
there's like none.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, I guess they kind of thought like,
yeah, she didn't,
I guess the picture mattered more.
Yeah.
The picture mattered more than the negative. So, but yeah, so I think that's kind of where I'm at. And it goes back to like creating meaningful work and like even my Instagram and my website, I'm trying to curate it. So I'm not just putting, you know, random photos in there. I need there to be some sort of story being told and purpose behind that.
Yeah. I think that's important. Yeah.
You know, narrative building. And I think like being a first gen Mexican American here, it's important to tell my story and then to be able to put that out there, whether it's in a book or however that ends up manifesting itself, is important for my daughter to see as well. Of like, okay, really? Like anything is possible. You know?
So does that mean are you documenting like a lot of home life, you know, like a lot of your daughter's growth and, you know, things that you guys do, or are you kind of more like a camera up when, you know, work's kind of involved?
Yeah. Like there's always moments where I have the camera out and I'm photographing her and my partner and daily life. But you know, all of that, that's more of like the private stuff, right? Like mm-hmm. I don't share too much of that. There's some stuff I share, like we do an annual photo shoot with Myra and our daughter, make like a backdrop, something. I'll do something together, throw something together. And then we'll kind of do like during her birthday in November, the baby's birthday, we'll do like a little photo shoot and stuff. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like cute. Documenting that. So I don't know, maybe in 20 years that'll be something
that could yeah. be really cool. Yeah,
but yeah, most of the stuff is just like, you know, candid stuff and mm-hmm. trying to keep it on film because I like that physicality of like having a record.
Yeah,
we'll be right back with listener question for Darren right after this message from our sponsor.
Swimsuit check, sunscreen check, phone charger check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Just want to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We develop some film. We talk shop. We laugh. We also try to get a former guest for these. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from photographic.mania. And they wanted to know, did you ever feel as if your work wasn't good enough? And if so, how did you push past that? It's deep.
Very deep.
That's a really good question. And I think that every creative kind of holds doubt, you know, in their mind and heart about their work. So I 100% always carry doubt about my work. And, you know, I have a close group of friends that I reach out to asking, you know, for their opinion on a project or what I'm doing. Yeah. And all I ever, I even tweeted this out and I said, anybody that is just like gassing you up about your work and just telling you how it's always good, they're a good friend. I'm sure their intentions are good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's not what you need for your work.
Yeah.
You need critiques. You need to know where you need to improve. And so I 100% always have doubt about everything I do. And so whatever I learned from that experience of what I felt like I fell short in or what my peers think like I should improve on, that's what I take into the next shoot.
Wow.
And I think if you ever get to the point where you're like, aha, this shit's fire, like this is the best I've ever done.
That's like, dangerous.
That's an L move, you know, that's a huge L.
Yeah.
Like don't ever fall into that trap because A, there's always going to be someone out there trying to do more and right. better than you and you know, anyone else that they're competing with. And B, it's a trap, you know, like your work's never going to be good. And there's no such thing as perfection. There's only continued growth. And so, yeah, hold it close, reevaluate it, and then just figure out what you can do better next time.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I also, you always have to like let your guard down when you ask for critique, because I'm somebody who's like, I'm gonna get my feelings hurt. That hurts my feelings. Or like, that's mansplainy. Like, don't tell me like I should have done this X, Y, and Z, because now you're just trying to wave your whatever around.
Yeah.
But to be like genuine, you have to like, yourself like be like, all right, I'm going to accept this critique and learn from it versus being like, well, I meant to light it that way, even though it's totally underexposed. Okay.
Yeah. Like I had for this last LA Times thing I did, I shot a lot of it in the sunset and then some of it like midday and some like right when it was like dark. Mm. And I had a friend tell me like, yo, some of the pictures look like really orange. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like orange. And I looked at him again. I'm like, kind of orange. And I was like, fuck, dude. And those got printed and everything. So I was like, oh, geez. Like, dang.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, like, you need that, right? You need people to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you can't be surrounded by yes people all the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's like an ego thing. You have to, like, accept it.
Be
like, yeah. Totally. Like, you look back and you're like, oh, shoot, they are too orange. Like, should have color corrected a little bit more. Or whatever, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But then now you're like, next time, you'll be like, next time you'll see it, you know?
Yeah, and next time I'm like, make sure it doesn't look orange. Please. But yeah, always go with an open mind, figure out what you can improve on. And if you can do it without somebody telling you what to do, that's better, right? Or that's not better, but that's also a step ahead, right? Because then you're looking for like, okay, this doesn't look right.
I miss that. I used to get photo dumps from friends and stuff. It's been a while. I mean, Chris, you still send me photos and stuff. But I used to get, when I was more active on Instagram, that's one thing I do miss about when I kind of took my crown off from being on Instagram and went back to being a normal human being. I miss that because I would get photo dumps or I would photo dump in somebody's messages and just kind of sit there and wait to hear like what... You know, oh, I'm working on this project. And they're like, well, that picture doesn't fit with the rest of them. You know, you need to pull that one. And that is good to hear. And just like you guys were saying, it does kind of hurt when you get those critiques. But, you know, you do need to, you know, be sat down every once in a while and be told that ain't it, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny because like when you like, hey, what do you think? And you know, they're like, they ain't. That and you're like, what am I gonna say? Like, and you know, and somebody comes back with like, these are great,
fire,
or like, or they're like, you know, those, you know, it's hard because people will be like, do you want the truth or do you want me to tell you it's great? It's like, you have to be like, I need you to tell me it's great or I need you to tell me the truth, you know?
100%.
It's just so funny, the whole like. This whole conversation is funny because it's like, just what I said, like, I wanted you to critique it, but also now I'm going to go cry. I'm a shit photographer. God damn it. I knew
it. Give me a minute.
Yeah.
Well, good answer.
Yes. Good answer. Great question too.
Can I ask who asked that?
Yeah. It was Photographic Mania was their Instagram handle. All right. So we will go to the camera question. This is like one of the craziest episodes where I don't think we've talked about a camera once this entire episode.
We're just talking about like photography as like.
I know. I love it. So let's bring it around. Okay. All right. Part one of the two-part question is the desert island camera. You can only choose one for the rest of your life. What's it going to be and why?
Brownie 4x5 probably.
Ooh.
Oh.
Interesting.
The hell else am I gonna do? I got a lot of time.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's true.
I think like I don't know. It takes it back to like really understanding what photography is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
You got to time it right. Got to make sure there's no flares in the lens. You got to be attentive to it, right? Like I think going back to that is like really important. I think understanding that's really important.
I love that about. You know, large format where you just have the ground glass in the back, it's upside down and flipped around, and you got to still figure it out. You got to go to corner to corner to make sure everything looks good.
Yeah.
Good answer. Yeah.
Which one did you say?
Like a brownie, like one of those.
Oh, whoa.
With just like the pinhole.
Damn. Oh, a brownie. Box.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Dude, those are legit.
With the 4x5, I think they have the ones with the 4x5 holder.
Do you shoot with one a lot?
I have one. I've only shot with it a couple times because it's really difficult.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. I think I left it in storage because I was like, I'm not going to use this for anything right now. But I guess if I ever get stuck on a desert island, I'll take it with me.
I like that approach. That's a good approach.
Yeah. The brownie with the pinhole and that's it.
Yeah.
The focusing. I think it's I don't know what they do the pinhole. It's like F8 or F11 or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's something like that. It's like a standard aperture.
Wow.
That's it.
That's a first.
That's a first.
That's all you need. That's all you need. The camera doesn't matter making a good photograph. It could be any camera.
So true.
Man. But yeah.
All right, part two. Part two is the white whale. Is there a camera out there that you've always wanted to own, or you owned and got rid of it? It's just something that you're lusting after right now. You got to have it.
I think the Fuji, I think it's a 617, like the panoramic medium format.
Oh, yeah.
617. I think that's what it is, right?
Something it's like a 6x17. It's
like a rectangle cone camera. Yeah, I saw someone a couple years back. I watched a video of someone using that in Alaska. They were like on a boat or something like that, photographing Alaska on that. And you don't have, I think the one that he was using, there's no focusing or anything like that. It's just apertures.
Okay.
Like you're just kind of like guessing distance or something like that. And I don't know, the experience just looks crazy. I don't know if I care too much about like the huge wide format. But the difficulty of being able to shoot on that and then get it right is what interests me. But the frame size is like pretty crazy too. You just can't really use it for anything other than like printing it out.
Yeah. I've always wanted like a massive pano camera as well. I love panoramic stuff. I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I was using a Hasselblad X-Pan for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool. I mean, I don't know. I was like not really, I don't know. It was cool.
Yeah. See, I'm like not a fan of the panoramic, so
5K cool? I don't think so.
I know.
If I find one for like $700 bucks, I'll buy it. But it was just I don't know. It just feels like it's like they're trying to sell it so hard. You know, when they came out with that camera, you can do 35 and pano.
Yeah,
but it's definitely more for like cinematographers, I think.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, man. Well, solid answer.
Yeah, good answers. Well, I'll say it again. Thank you for joining us a second time, Darren, for chatting with us. I'm glad we had some scheduling challenges in the beginning and then
power outage
the first time. So, but this is definitely worth it. Thank you. Where can everybody check out you and your work?
You can check out my work at darrenvargas.jpg on Instagram and darrenvargas.com. It's my portfolio site. Can I give a couple shout outs?
Yeah, of course.
Please.
Shout out to Bulk Project. My buddy Colin, he's like bulk loading his own cine film. He's got like black and white, super sick. He just gave me some black and white that he freshly spooled for me. It's 200 ISO, and I'm gonna test this. Shout out to Ramon Munoz for doing my website. Love that guy. But I think that's fine.
Awesome, Timothy. Where are you?
Guys, head over to Instagram, Twitter at Timothy Makeups. There's also a plethora of YouTube stuff. If you just go to the search bar on YouTube, type in Timothy Makeups, you'll find a bunch of my stuff there. Also, timothymakeups.com. I'm going to be working on some updating that, getting some fresh stuff on there, and possibly writing and noveling on there and spewing all the stuff I want to talk about that I don't talk about much. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
All right, we're going to hold you to that now because you told them, everybody.
No,
so.
I want to. I have a refresh in the works. I just have to finish it up and hit, go or whatever it is.
Amazing. I am Crispy Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And Granary, you still on there? And we're Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram.
Yay.
Darren, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. First off, Kristen, I would like to thank Darren for coming on the show. It's great getting to meet you, hear your story, learn all about your photography. What a great story. Great episode. Thanks so much, Darren. Thank you for coming on the show. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only develop and hang nights. Chris and I are going to be doing a weekly wrap-up show that's coming up here in the next couple weeks. That's going to be exciting. We're super stoked about that. And we also have a bunch of stuff in the archives. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. So again, if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For all the Patreons that already help support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. We appreciate each and every single one of you. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thanks, guys. All right, that's going to be it for this week's episode. Darren, thanks again. Great getting to chat. And stay tuned for next week with an all-new episode. We'll see you soon. Take care. Keep shooting. And yeah, thanks, guys.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.